Blog Talk Radio. We are not alone. And a very, very good evening to everyone out there. And I am Leslie Mitchell-Clark, your host, and I am welcoming you to another episode of Contact, where we explore all things ufology-related, metaphysically-related, etc., etc. So we're very happy that you've joined us this evening, this wonderful spring evening. And if you are of the Celtic persuasion, I hope you had a very happy and joyous Beltane festival. And I think there probably is not a culture on the planet that doesn't have a spring festival of some sort. It's such a joyous time of reawakening and new beginnings, and it seems to be just imprinted in our DNA. So whatever and however you're celebrating spring, I hope that you're having a joyous time. Now, I'm going to be joined this evening, of course, by my co-host and sidekick and also the producer of the show, Mr. Wes Roberts. I think he's right there on my virtual switchboard. I'm just going to check with that. Wes, is that you? Are you there?
It is, Leslie. Hello there. Glad to be on the show.
Well, I'm sorry you're not here in the Blog Talk studio. I know you're at the remote studio because you have a little running injury, but hopefully your wife is taking good care of you and you're going to be up and around in no time.
Well, that and a little bit of wine, it all helps.
Highly recommended. Highly recommended. Okay. Well, I was just about to mention that we're very excited because we have a wonderful guest this evening, and this is her first time visiting us on Contact, and hopefully we'll be able to chat with her many more times. We are welcoming to the program Ms. Sandy Mack. And Sandy is a noted clinician. She is a multidisciplined healer and an expert dowser. And although I believe she began her professional career as a psychiatric social worker, she became, I should say, frustrated. I'm sure she'll speak to that, frustrated by the pain and suffering of people that are suffering from so-called mental illnesses. So she then began exploring and learning a number of healing modalities. I think she knows something like 70 different distinct healing modalities. And she is doing very profound work also as a practitioner of Dr. Bradley Nelson's The Emotion Code and The Body Code. So I'm going to be very interested to hear about those modalities because, like myself, Sandy is a hypnotherapist and regressionist, and I'm very excited to learn about the power of these modalities that she's using. Now, also, I did want to mention that Sandy Mack is currently the first ever female president of the prestigious American Society of Dowsers. And she has also done extensive work in South Africa alongside our very good friend, archaeologist, ancient astronaut theorist, exopolitician, and founder of the worldwide Ubuntu Party, Mr. Michael Tellinger. So, Wes, it's going to be exciting to get into that. We had such a good time with Michael Tellinger last year.
Oh, absolutely we did. And it's kind of fun when you put faces to names and you meet folks in person. And I know we'll be meeting Sandy in a month, roughly, a little bit more than that.
Okay. All right. I just had one of our listeners text me directly saying that there's some audio issue. Does everything look all right on your end, Wes? Everything looks perfectly normal to me here at the virtual Blog Talk studio.
I don't detect any problem. I'm not getting feedback on the phone. The chat room is open, and we have a couple of guests in it. So I'm not sure. Sometimes if you log out of the show and then come back to it, that might do it. Or if your phone's too close to your speakers or something, that could cause a little feedback.
Okay. All right. So I would recommend that if you are having a little issue, please log out and log in. And let us know. Chat into the chat line. If you're looking at the virtual switchboard, you can just press the chat button, and you will be communicating directly with us.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I see by my virtual switchboard that I believe Sandy is calling in. I think she's calling from all the way from New Mexico this evening, or perhaps Arizona. We'll clarify that. But let me pick up the line here. Okay. Hello, is that you, Sandy?
It is, Leslie. Thank you so much for inviting me to come in. And I'm right now in beautiful Prescott, Arizona. I've been down here teaching and seeing some clients, and it's a very amazing place. I don't know if you've ever been here, but
I found,
working with the clients, that there's lots of extraterrestrial activity in this old valley, in this Wild West country town. So, yeah, that's where I'm at right now, and I'm so delighted to meet both of you.
Yes, that the area where you are has a long and, I think, extremely ancient tradition of contact with extraterrestrial beings. I know that the Native Americans of the area have been calling, communicating with their sky friends, you know, for millennia. So there may be some. I've often wondered if there isn't some geophysical aspect to Arizona and New Mexico that leads to all of that activity. It certainly feels like a very special part of the earth. There's a very unique energy where you are, to say the least.
Yes, I think there is. And I live about 4 hours from here. I live up in northeastern Arizona between four Indian reservations, the Hopi, the Navajo, the White Mountain Apache, and the Zuni Reservation. And there are vortexes and portals and stargates and all kinds of amazing things up there, and even stuff that the old Hopis know about, but they won't talk to. They say the time's not quite right to reveal some of the secrets and things up there. And I just moved into a little ranch up there about a year ago, so I'm waiting for all this stuff to be revealed. But this is also the land, a little closer up where I'm at, where Travis Walton, some of your listeners may be aware of, they made a movie of his work.
Oh, yes.
He was the one that was abducted for several days, and I know Travis and have spent time with him over at different times. So, yes, there's lots of off-planet visitors, as we might say.
Indeed. And so Travis was in, I believe, Snowflake, Arizona,
yep,
if I'm not mistaken. And certainly, the movie Fire in the Sky, which was written by Mel Torme's son, by the way, the script was, at any rate. Did you meet Tracy?
Travis had a conference last fall, and he was there.
Oh, my goodness.
Got to spend time with him. He was very impressed with him as a person, yeah.
He's a wonderful person. I didn't know him, but oddly enough, I knew his father, Mel Torme, because both my father and my brother worked with him. Six degrees of separation. But anyway, I'm so pleased that you've joined us this evening, and I just can't wait to talk about some of the exciting work that you're doing. And before we really get into it, I just wanted to say we have a really very huge thing in common. I mean, I think we have a lot of things in common, probably. But I was reading your wonderful notes about your life and your experiences that are on your website. And you, in fact, worked professionally as a psychiatric social worker. Was that your...
Right. I was up in northern Wisconsin, up in Superior, Wisconsin, the tip of Lake Superior. And fresh out of college, with actually a degree in fine arts and criminology, I got plopped into this mental hospital and became the social worker, you could say psychiatric or anything, that I was in charge of the whole hospital. And so I had to design treatment plans and do intake interviews and all that stuff. And what I found out is that a lot of crazy people are not crazy. And that certainly drugging them up and warehousing them up and locking them up and putting them out of sight and mind is not the model that makes any difference in the world. And that really, after being there 4 years, that really put me on a search to find some other alternative healing modalities and things that would genuinely help people.
Yes,
so that
yes.
really started me on the search to do that, yes.
That was a big epiphany. And like you, as I was working my way through university, I was a psychiatric aide first and then a psychiatric technician at the local state mental hospital, which was also in the Midwest in South Dakota. And like you, I don't think people really have a very clear idea about how primitive our mental health care, well, how primitive it is now, but you know, go back 20, 30, and in my case, even longer ago, and we barely had psychotropic medication. There was barely Thorazine. They didn't know anything about doses. The electroshock therapy was still in wide use. Other things, which I won't even, we had padded rooms, for God's sake. So it was, there was a lot of, just like you, my feeling about the human suffering and that we were actually approaching this in a completely wrong direction inspired me later in life to change my perspective and work in some of these other modalities. But these kinds of things leave a very big imprint. And who's to say that you didn't sort of put that experience in place to spur you on to what you were going to be doing later?
Well, that's a good point, Leslie. And sometimes people will come in, clients, and they're going to go, you know, you're going to think I'm crazy if I say that. And I go, no, I really do know what crazy is, and you're not crazy.
That's true. We've actually seen it. So,
although there are a couple times with a couple people, I kind of doubt, is there a little bit of a schizophrenia or a little bipolar or something going on here? So there's sometimes people I do get to question a little bit.
Yes, indeed. And we have to be sort of vigilant in our work that people who do need genuine psychiatric care and possibly appropriate medications, you know, get those things. But there are a lot of people, most people can be incredibly helped by other modalities, I believe. So, Sandy, tell me a little bit about, now I'm fascinated by the idea of dowsing, and just for the edification of our listeners, so they don't think that you're just walking around out in the desert with, you know, with two poles sticking out there. what is a dowser is your main focus, and how does your technique?
Well, I was, of course, introduced to dowsing when I was younger and saw people looking for water for a well. I didn't actually take a training class in it until the 70s, and then it really opened up a whole new world to me that you could douse for anything. You could douse for vitamins and nutrients and who did you want to hire and should I go shopping here and are there any lost kids there and where did I put my car keys and literally any information that exists in the universal mind, Leslie, I believe can be accessed through dowsing. It's important to learn how to ask the correct question, and it's a very simple, I believe it's an art, I believe it's a science, I believe it's a skill, and above all, I believe it's a gift. And those of us who are dowsers have an obligation, a sacred obligation to continue to pass that on and help other people to learn this, because I think as long as you're a dowser, you will always be free. You'll have access to information that many other people don't. You'll be able to tap in on your own higher consciousness or universal mind or whatever you want to call that and be able to make choices that are informed choices that a lot of other people, like doctors and things, are just guessing at, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can check your dosages for things, vitamins, minerals, herbs, things you're taking. Literally, there's no area of your life that I can think of that can't be enhanced by adding dowsing and learning to use that well. Now, let me add this. Some people think just because they can get the pendulum to swing a little bit that they're a good dowser. And I really encourage people to go and take a class or two. You can learn some really good skills in a day or so. Because just because you can play chopsticks does not mean you're a concert pianist.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly.
So I use it for me. I use it all the time. I use it in my daily life. I always carry a pendulum in my pocket or a dowsing device. And I certainly use it when I'm working with clients. Like, I'll go down, well, what do we need to do? Do we need to do a soul retrieval? Do we need to do emotion code work? Are there entities that need to be released? Is there extraterrestrial interference? Do they need some Bach flower remedies? You know, so I'll douse for all those different kinds of things, and then it helps me to narrow down and focus right in there with what needs to be done in what priority and what order.
Mm. So it seems in a way like the dowsing, whether you're using an alternative dowsing device or whether you're using a pendulum, it seems to be that possibly you are keying in on a vibration that you are seeking in a way. Is it a kind of an antenna, would you say?
Yes, it taps in. It's like a a dowsing device, or we can even use deviceless dowsing, and I believe muscle testing is a type of deviceless dowsing, that you are accessing, it's like a readout of your subconscious mind or higher mind. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's a device that can give you a physical readout, so to speak, of a question that you're asking.
I see.
And when I'm working with an individual, I feel like my high self is connecting with their high self, and then that's the way I can sort of get information and then, you know, direct the session in whatever way is appropriate.
Yes, yes. And I would imagine it's probably very helpful if you are, you know, scanning someone's body for either energy blockages or some physical situation that is as yet undiagnosed or has been misdiagnosed.
Right. You know, we have to be careful because we're not physicians, and in this case,
exactly.
we're not allowed to diagnose. But we can certainly evaluate. We can notice
yes.
symptomology. We can identify energy blocks or weaknesses in the aura. There's nobody that says we can't do that.
That's right. And certainly, you know, it's I've often discussed this on the air and with Wes and everything. It's unfortunate that sometimes we are the people of last resort that someone sees. I find particularly if there's some physical issue that has a chronic nature that hasn't been really addressed, often people really, really suffer and become just fed up with the medicines or what they're being told, and then finally, you know, they
right.
will, they'll see someone like us.
Yeah, they're
yes.
willing to consider anything because they've exhausted the medical and pharmaceutical and insurance and the business model with that. And
indeed.
Then you can tell them, okay, you've got to go bury 4 acorns at midnight under a full moon, and they'd go stand on their head and do it if they thought that would help. And actually, I love to work with those kind of people because they're way past, well, you have to prove it, and there's not enough research, and I went online, and I don't know if this will work or not work.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like,
yeah.
hey, just help me out. And if the pain goes away, I don't care what I did, and I don't care how it worked out. Just to help
yes.
me get my life back. Yeah.
They are often in a really high state of receptivity when they have let go. They've just kind of reached a point where they, as you say, they have let go of the you know, the frontal lobe analysis of the process for sure. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about this technique that you're using called Dr. Bradley Nelson's The Emotion Code and also The Body Code. And they sound, from the little bit I've read.
That's a real exciting technique that this man, who is a chiropractor and is pretty tuned in fellow himself, has developed, and uses muscle testing. And what he's found, well, we've kind of known this anyway, but he formalized it into a particular protocol, is that often we have trapped or underlying emotions that never got resolved when the incident occurred. And so what happened is they sort of get stuck in our body. And it's like you push the pause button on a video, it just keeps playing it over and over and over because it never got resolved. And your psychic friend there, I'm sure, can agree with this, that people that can see clairvoyantly or psychically in these instances will often see this energy in the body. It can be as small as an egg. It can be as large as a cantaloupe.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to bring that to the surface, it literally seems to come out in the aura or the energy field, and you can identify. You can identify it with dowsing. You can identify it with muscle testing, or people can see it psychically. Now, what he's found out, and this is a great system, it's just great. In fact, he and I are really committed to getting this all over the world, and I especially have a dream of getting this done in disaster areas, like the
yes.
the big hurricanes and the thing that happened in Nepal. If you could just
mm-hmm.
imagine flying a small team of people over there, getting with a group of translators, I can teach this method in 2 or 3 hours. They could go out and work with people immediately to release the the PTSD, the post-traumatic
yeah.
stress, the
yeah.
paralysis, the fear, the shock, the trauma that's going on with these people that undoubtedly otherwise would stay with them for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And I talked to Dr. Nelson. He said, yeah, let's go. Let's figure out somehow how to do this. His dream is also to get this on the Native American in the Indian reservations, or first, as you would call, First Nation people. And
yes.
Also, we have just recently had a conference where he had one of the speakers was the father of a woman named Elizabeth Smart. Some of you may remember.
Oh, yes.
That was kidnapped and then kept. And
yes.
So they're now dedicated to helping battered women and people that were traumatized with this type of stuff. And they're going to set something up so we can start clearing those people from a distance. But anyway, you identify what the emotion was, and he's reduced it down to a list of about 65 that you can very easily narrow down to 5. And then asking the body if it has any this trapped or suppressed emotion, and then you can release it with, guess what, a simple magnet. I tell clients on the phone, go get a magnet off the refrigerator. And using the governing vessel meridian, which is part of the acupuncture system,
yes.
It's a meridian that runs kind of from the upper lip, up the center of the forehead, up through the third eye, over the
yes.
top of the head, back down the back of the neck, spine, all the way to the tailbone. That's sort of like the main governing vessel. It's like the spine is the key place for the nerves. Well, this is for the whole acupuncture system. And using strong intention and focus, you can literally release that trapped emotion, and then it won't show up in the energy field, and then people that can see clairvoyantly will see it gone. And a lot of times there is very immediate relief with pain, with issues that have been going on, in some cases for years, and I have found in some cases for a lifetime, because
yes.
I've extended it even beyond what Dr. Nelson does to working with it with past lives.
Oh, indeed. People can absolutely carry trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder from lifetime to lifetime, because the information, memory and all that is not part of the physical body in that sense. I mean, it can stay with our etheric body. I'm sure you've seen many, many cases where people are carrying even physical scars from trauma that has happened to them in a past life.
Absolutely.
I do. I mean, I usually try to, in doing any kind of emotional release work, I certainly explore the present life, and most of the time, that's where it is. But there is a percentage of people that are carrying trauma from other lifetimes, and we have to really that has to be acknowledged and worked with. But it can be. That's the beauty, and that's the miraculous part of this type of work, that you can see miracles every day when people release these negative emotions that are blocking their energy. I know sometimes, and this isn't all the time, and I certainly wouldn't call myself a psychic or anything like that. I may be sensitive, but sometimes if I close my eyes when I'm working with a client, I will be able to really see their etheric body, and I can see blockages as cloudy, amorphous black areas, is what it looks
awesome.
Like to me.
Great.
So I wonder if I should now, I bet if I could add dowsing to my consultations.
Absolutely, you douse as a source in this life, past life, or both. How many lives need to be released to clear it?
Yes.
One, two, it might have gone on for 15 or 20 lifetimes, but maybe you only have to clear two that were the key or karmic one, and like a domino effect, it frees all the rest of that up.
Indeed. And certainly, Sandy, the the work that I do with people who have had, I hesitate to call them abductees anymore, but people who are experiencers, this would be a tremendous tool for the release of any type of fear-based trauma, which is still lingering.
Absolutely. And I've met people that have been traumatized for years and years, and because my experience is that many people that have been contacted / abducted or whatever, that this is something that has happened to them in other lifetimes as well. I don't know if you've found that or you've ever considered that.
Oh, yes.
In my opinion. So it's like if it was a traumatic in another time and then all of a sudden they're contacted again, that trauma imprint, which has never been healed or released, kicks right back in again.
Indeed.
PTSD stuff that they carry, that shows up in them and in their behavior and their relationships and their health and everything. Yeah.
Indeed. And sometimes some individuals even are experiencing incredible longing and sadness because they have fairly recently incarnated as a different type of humanoid on another
right.
planet, and they don't feel like they belong here, but they sort of signed up for it, for the coming, the coming events that are on their way. But there can be tremendous melancholy and feelings of homesickness, and I wonder if it isn't a bit maybe like gender body dysmorphia, where someone feels like they're in their body, they're in the wrong sex. You know, it's
right.
Some people definitely have a disorientation to their Terran physical form, I would have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it's useful to take them back to where they made that decision to agree to come in with that.
Yes. Yes.
Intensity or invitation or gift or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
I think that's actually, I'm going to, Wes, are you there? Are you listening in? Is he there?
Yes, I am.
Oh,
yes.
I just wondered if you maybe wanted to chat with Sandy a bit about what we were just talking about people who have incarnated in different lifetimes as other types of humanoid beings from other places, and how there can be a maybe a disorientation or a discomfiture with being in a Terran body right now.
Yeah, I can comment on that from personal experience, and I would be curious to know of Sandy's opinion of this, because I have felt at times quite misplaced, and Leslie and I have gone through 30-plus sessions with me and uncovered an awful lot, but I also have a collection of close friends who feel similar to me in the sense that they wonder where their home is. We feel like we're looking for home. And I don't know if that's something you've encountered, Sandy, or not.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I know people that have, as children, would sit out at night under the stars and just long to go home. Like, E.T., take me home. You know, so absolutely, I run into that all the time. All the time. Or they just come here and they're just a sense of confusion, like, what? How did I get to this place? Why do people not treat each other well, especially if they're coming in from the angelic realm? It's like, why do people kill each other? I don't know why they would do things like that. I'm sure you've met people like that as well, that are coming from such a higher dimensional place. And there's a certain naivety about the brutality and the reality of what's going on the earth plane. You have to go, well, I know, honey, it's rough, but you know, this is like the ghettos in wherever, any big city, and sometimes people aren't always nice to each other, and, you know, you just best learn to put up some protection or take care of yourself. Get street smart quick.
Yeah.
and so they're too sensitive, is that right?
Well, I don't know if you'd say they're too sensitive. I'd say they're very sensitive, and some of these people have sensitivity, gifts, and abilities and everything. That it's not quite time, it's a timing situation, I think. It's not quite time for them to be able to apply that or use that or understand how that's going to be utilized as we go through these changes on the planet. So,
right.
You know, sometimes they just hate it. Oh, I just hate it that I'm so sensitive. I pick up everything, or they're so empathic. But there's going to be a need for that, and it can be utilized in a particular way. So it's just a question of refining that down, in my opinion.
Thank you for that answer.
That's helpful.
Yeah, I agree, Sandy. So, Sandy, tell us a little bit about what you've been up to in South Africa with our dear friend Michael Tellinger, who's just got to be one of the greatest people in the world, isn't he?
Oh, he's great. I met him several years ago in San Francisco. I heard him on Coast to Coast. And I said, oh, my God, I've got to meet this guy. And went over to him, and I actually went to Carrie Cassie. I said, look, you don't know me from Adam. I stay under the radar, but I do past life regression work and stuff like that, and I would love to check some stuff out with Michael. It was funny. She was talking to somebody else. She just kind of looked at me up and down like she was scanning my field or something, And then she took me over right away and introduced me to Michael, whom I'd actually met at the door. And she said, this gal wants to do some work with, she said, and I think she's one that you can trust. It was really an interesting introduction.
Yeah.
So we began doing some work and checking. I helped bring him back to the States. I sponsored him to be my keynote speaker at American Society of Dowsers 2 years ago. And I, in the meantime, had gone over for a UFO and consciousness conference that he'd had in Johannesburg and was able to go up to Adam's Calendar and out where he lives and do some dowsing out in the field several places. And then he and I talked about putting together a group. I said, wow, wouldn't it be great to have a bunch of dowsers come to South Africa and check out these stone circles and, you know, all these ancient sites. And so we kind of did that. There was several people on there that weren't dowsers, but we did that last year in January and into February part of the time. We were gone several weeks, and it was really a marvelous, marvelous trip. We went to several places, and then we also went down to Cape Town, and we went out to the Great Zimbabwe Ruins, which were equally fascinating, and of course did a lot of dowsing all those places and tried to tune in and check some things out, and it was wonderful. But I have to tell you that I, when I first met him and started exploring some of this, I was in Florida. And I was working with a client there that is actually a retired engineer. I think he was a nuclear engineer or physicist or something, who had originally been very interested in Tesla. And he wanted to, you know, work with that energy, but he went to work for a company called Edison Electric. And if you know anything in the history, they're the last people that are going to do anything with Tesla. I know. He's retired. And what he did is that he came in to do some past life work. And he said, you know, I have a feeling I might have been in Atlantis, maybe worked with the crystals or something like that. And so I took him back. Sure enough, he worked with the crystals. He would look for fractures and things in the big crystals. And it occurred to me to say, I wonder if he's had any past lives in South Africa. Now, this was one of our dream subjects that gets really clear, good, detailed information. And to have somebody that was a scientist, that I could ask scientific questions like hertz and frequencies and all those kind of hard words, was just a dream. He tapped right in on a past life, and we got so much information. I mean, I taped it and sent two cassettes immediately to Michael, and we've talked about it and been able to some extent, verify some of that with what we found over there.
Wow.
He was a being. So we think of it in terms of slaves, but this is not the slaves that they give the pictures of where they're beating them with whips, you know, trying to build the pyramids. These people had great respect for their work. They lived in little dwellings. They had a mate and they had children. He talked about the overlords, that the overlords did this and the overlords did that. They helped keep them protected. If there were any problems, they would take them aboard the ships. The ships kind of hovered. And when he explained, when I asked him about the circles, part of his job was to clear the spaces where the circles were going to be put down.
Uh-huh.
And he would clear that land, Leslie, of everything, all the plants, all the rocks, all the sticks and stones and everything, so that it would be perfectly smooth. Then they would sprinkle this. At first it sounded like sand, but it was really more like a powder or an ash.
Uh-huh.
That could actually be reused. That tapped in on the frequencies of the earth in that particular area. Now, do you know what I'm speaking of if I say cymatics?
Yes, yes.
Okay, good. And some of your listeners may not know it by that name, but let me tell you what it is, because they probably do if they think about it. If you put sand on, or a powder, on a metal plate, and then you play a frequency, a sound or something like that, let's say the sound ohm, or something like that, that plate will begin to vibrate and it will make a design or a symbol. For example, the sound of Om is the same as the Sanskrit letter or symbol of Om. It literally is the same. And so that's what was going on, and that's how they would know to make the circle in that particular shape was based on the frequencies coming out of the earth. Then they would take the stones and lay them where that powder type stuff was. Another thing that was really interesting, when I said, because we know that some of the stones didn't come from that area, and these are, you know, I mean, Michael says there's now over 10 million of these all over South Africa. So it's not just South Africa, but it's Botswana and Zimbabwe, several other countries that they're in. And once you get an eye for it, you can really see them. Just pull up Google Earth and you can see them very easily. And they do, many of them ring like a bell. I've got one, and I don't have it here with me in Prescott, but I could tap on it and you could hear it.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I asked how far did they have to bring the stones, or how did they bring them? Well, he said they passed them from one hand to another, kind of like a fireman's brigade. And I said, how far was the distance between the two people that they would pass it? About a mile. They levitated those stones, Leslie, to be able to get them to that place.
Yes.
So all this information we came up with doing past life on the scientist that was back there. And I found two other lifetimes where he was also back in South Africa and have since regressed some other people. So that's one of my really fun things to do, is to use the past life regression in dowsing in some of these sacred sites and some of the other things.
Yes.
Like I've been twice the last 2 years now to Bosnia, where they found those wonderful pyramids.
Oh, yes. Dr. Osmanagic was on our show, as a matter of fact.
Yes, and I finally got Michael and Dr. Osmanagic together. So Michael was one of his keynotes at his conference last year. I went over there. And Dr. Sam invited me to speak about dowsing, which I was very fortunate to do, and we went in the tunnels and did some dowsing there. So, yeah, that's a real exciting, fun part of my life, is to kind of go to these places and check out some of this stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're going to continue with this in just one moment. I did want to take a brief pause just for a little station identification. Folks, you are listening to Contact, and we are live this evening with our wonderful guest, Sandy Mack, who is a healer in many modalities and an expert dowser. And we are live, so if you would like to call in from Canada, you may use our Canadian line at 424-220-1861. And if you would like to call in from the U.S., our toll-free number is 888-891-3884. And we'd like to take just a moment to thank our gracious sponsors. First of all, I would like to thank Euphoria, the Euphoria organization led by Mr. James Borg. Thank you so much for your continued support. We'd like to thank Conspiracy Culture, Marvelous Bookstore, and Lecture Series, Mr. Patrick White. Thank you. We would like to thank Variety Store Productions, Mr. Greg Summer, wonderful videographer who's worked with us, and Enchanted Reveries Jewelry, beautiful handcrafted jewelry, and also the Ontario Hypnosis Conference, and coming up, Alien Cosmic Expo, this June 26th, 27th, and 28th. So we thank you, our wonderful sponsors. Without you, there would be no Contact. And back to Sandy Mack. So Sandy, it's my, I guess, sort of understanding from the work of Zechariah Sitchin and other ancient astronaut theorists that the Atlanteans were really Anunnaki. It was Atlantis. What we are referring to as Atlantis was one of the base of operations of the Anunnaki, who are originally sharing DNA with other Pleiadian races. So they're very, very humanoid, very, very tall and fair. And there's been a lot of hubbub recently that you've probably read about with regards to the finding of giant skeletons in North America, all throughout North America. These people are sometimes referred to as the mound builders, but that hardly is descriptive enough. And there have been some recent deathbed confessions also from workers at high-level people at the Smithsonian who have revealed that literally thousands of giant skeletons have been destroyed by the Smithsonian because the idea of genetically superior humanoids that doesn't fit with our standard, you know, evolutionary idea. So I'm wondering if when you are doing the dowsing in South Africa or other places, do you ever get a visual impression of the beings that were in fact mining the gold or whatever you're researching?
You know, Leslie, I'm kind of like Helen Keller. I don't see, hear, or feel anything. I get information from my pendulum or my dowsing device. So I don't get that. I'm shielded or blocked or something. Actually, it goes back to Atlantis, if you will, from being able to get information directly in that particular way. But you're talking about giants, and it's certainly, I'm surprised you brought that up, because that has been an area I've been very interested in for quite some time. In fact, I just did a presentation in North Carolina on that, on the stone circles and the pyramids and the giants. And
yes.
Where we live in northern Arizona, there is this whole strip, southern Colorado, southern Utah, northern Arizona, New Mexico, where they have found extensive remains of giants.
Yes. Yes.
And I've doused that they've walked my land at my little ranch. I don't have any burials there. But they actually buried, and these were often the red-headed giants. They were redhead, they were blonde, they were quite tall, 8, 9, 10, 12 feet tall. One person that I've heard a lecture from who really prefers to stay quite anonymous and stay under the radar for exactly the reasons that you're speaking of, because the government comes in and swoops stuff up and hides it and denies it and everything like that.
Yeah.
And he talks about, now he hasn't seen it, he's found a lot of remains, and he's found graves. One thing that you may or may not know is that many of the graves were dug in solid rock. They would drill down in a corkscrew manner, quite a 20, 30 feet down. They would place the corpse, and then they would put fully clothed and whatever, sometimes with adornments and jewelry. Then they would put like a layer of sand, a layer of clay, a layer of sand, and they become mummified. And, of course, in this desert southwest, they would just dry up but be fully, fully preserved. In some cases, even more than some of the things, the mummies and stuff that I've seen when I went to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And they often had blonde hair, red head, wore great adornments. They were found with sometimes little metal scrolls with writings on them. And amazing things like that. But I've confirmed, been on the Navajo Reservation, spoke with the Hopis, that they were, in many cases, cannibals, and they would eat people. And they have it in their cosmology and the stories about these giants. And I believe, you know, you've seen pictures in the southwest of these cliff dwellings that were way up on the side of the mountain.
Yes, yes.
You know, they used to tell us in school, well, that's because the river might rise or hunting, and I thought, why don't they build some stairs? You know what? I'm very clear now. Those were cliff dwellings, so they could pull their ladders up and be safe from those giants coming and eating their kids. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
One other piece I wanted to tell you that this fellow has heard about from the natives up in the Four Corners area is that there is a cave, a limestone cave, in the Four Corners area that has in it, it's either one or two granite sarcophagus with a crystal lid, if you can imagine this.
Wow.
And inside is a giant that shows no sign of stasis. In other words, no sign of decay of the body. Wow. Like they're almost in a suspended animation. And I'm going to tell you what, honey, these puppies are 35 feet tall.
Wow. Wow.
35 feet tall. And I've got a friend, another dowser up in Colorado, and he's like 6'8". He had a grandmother that was really big, and she had a brother or cousin that was 8 feet tall and weighed 650 pounds. So, and this was not fat. So he's got some of that giant in his genetic line, and he's also a very quite gifted psychic and dowser, and we're going to go look at some places that he's identified probably this summer that he feels like there's other giant things with. So they're right in my own backyard. I don't even have to go over to Patagonia and South Africa or the Mound Builders. Were found all over the world, over the world. And it's just amazing that information has been suppressed and misinformation and lies and things put out about it. So Jack the Giant Killer and David and Goliath, all those have a basis in truth.
They do, and I think that people are actually far more literal than we give them credit for. You know, I think that when we see cave drawings, I don't think we're seeing imagination. I think we are seeing literally what these people experienced from their perspective as best as they could render it. I think that they were realists. That's what they were communicating, what actually happened. And you know, Sandy, as far as the, you know, again, just going back to the giant remains, starting in your area, you know, and heading west, there, of course, have been a lot of discoveries of giant red-haired skeletons in not only California, but specifically in the Channel Islands, Catalina particularly. They're really points to there being, and of course you and I, certainly this is no surprise to us, but there really points to there being a massive Pacific superculture as well as an Atlantic superculture. So, of course, we're talking about the Lemurians. And, you know, I was just looking at some fascinating DNA information a couple of days ago, and in keeping with this, the anomalous stuff that we see every day, they have discovered that Basque DNA, you know, the Basque people who are, of course, redheaded, and they've just, like, been plopped down in the Pyrenees there, and they have their own language, which is related to Sanskrit, like Gaelic. They share DNA markers with peoples in Indonesia. Now, how does that happen?
Well, you're not going to get it from looking at it logically, that's for sure. When I first trained in NLP, I studied neuro-linguistic programming with the original people, Bandler and Grinder, in the 70s. And they were teaching us about eye accessing cues and the basic movements that is pretty much international. And the one exception to that were the Basques in the Pyrenees.
Yes, yes.
They're not wired up like other people.
They are
not. I dated a guy who had Basque heritage, but I didn't know enough at that time to start asking some of these other questions or do some regression work with him. But yeah,
it's really as if they were plopped down there and they're just, you know, pretending to be sheep herders. But they are incredibly unique. Now, in the same genome information I was reading a few days ago, another astounding fact is that they were finally able to, and we discussed this on the show a couple weeks ago, but they were finally able to extricate and analyze mitochondrial DNA from the mummy of Tutankhamun, who, of course, is the son of Akhenaten. His mother was the Lady T, one of the mistresses of Akhenaten. But they took this DNA, and shockingly enough, 70% of the men in the British Isles are sharing mitochondrial DNA with Tutankhamun.
Is that awesome? Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty much all connected, aren't we?
Yeah, we're all connected.
When they start bringing in DNA from the other planets and the star systems, we're really going to see how we're all connected.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I don't think we're all that far away from understanding what has previously been termed junk DNA. We have multiple strands, and some of them are now just activating, have been latent or recessant. And, you know, the Anunnaki were master geneticists, but they had not perfected their craft completely. And when I say that, I mean that human beings, humanoids, we are susceptible to over 6,000 genetic anomalies. I mean, things that can go wrong. And no other life form on Earth, no animal, no primate, no other animal, no being on Earth has that potential for genetic disaster. So, yes, they upgraded us, they tweaked around with us, but but they were on a learning curve as well, and we kind of are suffering from, we're a little bit of a genetic tinker toy here.
I think that's a good way to put it. And I've been doing some research with, from an energetic point of view, with that quote-unquote junk DNA.
Yeah.
And I found it to be really amazing. I didn't do real good with some of the physics science type stuff in school, and I think a lot of the stuff they were teaching us were flat-out lies.
Mm-hmm.
So in my simplistic little mind, with my criminology detective overlay, I was like, what is this, and what's this about? And one of the things that I found, I don't know if you know, there is actually a genius gene. There is a gene that helps determine geniusness. And you know what? If that gene is compromised, in my experience, if that's compromised or damaged or deformed or hurt or gimped up or beat up or something, some very clinical term, of course, that the flip side of that is, guess what? It's dyslexia.
Really?
Yeah, so anybody that's dyslexic really is carrying some of that genius gene. But I found genes in people that have to do with their ability to give and receive unconditional love, with being able to sense the amount of divine light in a person. We have these, to communicate telepathically. We have these kind of genes in us, and I personally believe that when they did that genome research, they found that out. They just didn't think they needed to tell us about it, in my opinion.
Oh, I think so, too. I also think that these anti-vaccine radicals are barking up the wrong tree. I think that the incidence of the incredible spike of autism that we have is a multi-level situation, but part of it has to do with incredibly sensitive souls that are coming into the earth at this time.
Partly in one dimension and partly in another dimension.
Yeah. It sure feels that way. I don't know if there's been any other time in history where we have had autism occurring at this level.
Yeah. I don't have all the answers, but I know that there is a tie with either some of the metals in the vaccine or something, because I know personally several people with autistic kids, and it's such a challenge. And these were healthy kids before they had their vaccination.
Mm.
So there's something going on with that. I don't have it all, but of course nobody will ever fess up to it, because the massive amount of lawsuits would just be incomprehensible. Yeah,
it's just like, I'm sure that they prevented, that really birth control pills caused ultimately a lot of infertility. There's all kinds of stuff that is not being acknowledged. I know that there are true incidences where autism has been instigated. And in fact, in Canada here, because we have socialized medicine, right, which is mostly a marvelous thing, but sometimes they try to do things on the cheap a bit. And there is a three-part, when my kids were little, I can't remember exactly what it was called, but there's a three-part vaccine that has to do with pertussis and in the States.
Yeah, measles, mumps, and pertussis, yeah.
Yes, and in the States, it's given in three separate parts. Now, to be more economical, in Canada, they did it all in one vaccine, and apparently something in the way that vaccine was cultured or put together incited massive peanut allergies. Now, this is not on the level with autism, certainly, but you remember when we were kids, how many kids were allergic to peanuts when we
never
were in school?
Never heard of such a silly thing.
Never. And now all the kids, these little kids, they've got a closet full of EpiPens, and these kids did receive the triplicate vaccine with the unique culturing agent. And do you think the government will admit it? No.
I was on a flight recently, I can't remember where, when, maybe to North Carolina, somewhere within the last few months. And they got, it was Southwest Airlines, which I fly all the time, and they're noted for just giving out their peanuts. And they announced that there was someone on the plane that had a very severe peanut allergy, a kid, and they were not going to pass out peanuts to the whole plane because of this kid's extreme peanut allergy.
Yeah.
So they gave
him
presents or something. Now, wow.
This is not normal stuff. These are not things that had occurred before. Maybe be in a small rarity, but certainly not at the rate we see now. So, Sandy, will you be going back to South Africa to do some work, or is there a chance that you might go?
I would love to. All these things do is take time and money, and if you have unlimited time and money, you can go anywhere and do anything. I'd love to go back to Patagonia. Certainly want to go back to Bosnia and Tibet and some of these other places. I've got a couple other places on my bucket list. I want to go to Galapagos and Antarctica and some of these other places. And, I believe I've been there in other times past. I'm just kind of going back there. So yeah. I don't have any plans to go there. I'm going to see Michael in about a week or two. He and Louise will be at the Contact in the Desert Joshua Tree, which I've gone to for the last couple of years. And so I'll be seeing and hanging out and spend a lot of time with them there, and we'll talk about it and see what's coming up. Yeah.
Oh, that is wonderful.
But they're doing a lot with the Ubuntu movement, and I'm very, very excited about that. That's just the answer as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it is the answer, and we have a Canadian Ubuntu party to which both Wes and I are members, and it is a vision of the future that it's the time is now, and I can only imagine the wonderful changes that we're going to see in the world. And Sandy, have you I wonder if you have been to many sacred sites, possibly in Ireland, to Newgrange?
No, I've not been to Ireland, except to land one time and change planes in Dublin. I have been to some places in England. I've been, to Stonehenge and a couple of other places. And it was never really my favorite place, the English. And, my last name is not just Mac. It's actually a much longer name. It's MacEachran, which is a common name in Canada. And my grandfather and my great-grandfather came from Scotland and actually settled in Orangeville. So my grandfather was born in Orangeville. So I feel like when I come back to the Toronto area, this is where some of my ancestors sort of came from. I've done some work up in the Orkney Islands, up north of the Arctic Circle.
Oh, yeah.
And that was a magical place, kind of Vikings with the greatest place I've ever been in my life, and did some dowsing and did some work up there in some of the sacred stone circles and things like that. Would love to go back there. Yeah,
oh, my goodness. Well, the Orkney Islands, as you said, there's another place where they've done extensive DNA research on the men, and 95% of all the men in the Orkney Islands are essentially Scandinavian.
Wow, that makes sense.
Yeah,
those old
Vikings
got along, didn't they? They were pretty
psychic
people.
They were unique people, and we are really beginning to understand that it wasn't the violent raping culture that we've been led to believe, but there were many, many happy, homogenous settlements in England where the Scandinavian people were teaching the locals how to work with silver and do all this kind of stuff. So things are never quite as simple as we're led to believe, that's for sure.
Right, and like Michael says, we really do not know our history because it's written by the victors. They write that off, the truth about what happened. So
that's right.
How far this goes back, hundreds of thousands of years. I tell people, if it's 2,000 years since Christ, and let's say 20,000 or 30,000 since Atlantis, thinking about the stone circles in Africa, that's 300,000 years ago. And then you talk with somebody about Michael Cremo, where he's talking about, people have been on this planet more than a million years. It's just we're just kind of a drop in the bucket. But it is important times that we're in, that's for sure.
It is indeed. And I can't believe the time has just gone so fast, Sandy. This is completely ridiculous. But I did want to mention that we are thrilled we're going to be able to meet you in person, and you will be at the Alien Cosmic Expo in your other home, Canada, in Brantford, and that's of course June 26th, 27th, and 28th. And to see Sandy Mack and all kinds of other marvelous people, you can log on to aliencosmicexpo.com. And Sandy, what's the best place for folks to reach you if they want to speak with you directly?
I have a website called Design a New Destiny. Like, if you don't like your destiny, where you're going, let's go design a new one for you.
Yeah.
designanewdestiny.com. and all my contact information is on there. And I do hope people come to that conference. I'm going to be speaking for the first time at a UFO conference. I spoke at many other conferences, and introducing a technique that I've used for probably 15 or 20 years with helping people that have had negative or malicious UFO contactees. I actually go up in the ships and break the contact there. And there's no one else that I know of that's even thought of doing it, but I actually go up in the ships and secure the data, remove the implants, and take care of that stuff there. So I look forward to meeting you both and hopefully meet with some of the other people. I always love the people of Canada. I was originally from northern Minnesota, so I really do relate to Canada. I love everyone there. So I'm looking
forward to it. Well, I went
to
university.
Thank you so much.
In Minnesota, so we have that in common, too. All right, Sandy Mack, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you here in June in Toronto, and you just carry on with your blessed work. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you.
Sandy.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night now. Take care. All right, that was Sandy Mack. Next week we'll be here live, and remember, folks, we are not alone. Good night from Contact. Good night, Wes.
Good night, Leslie.